Back to throw. In trouble. He's going to be sacked. No, gets away. He runs. Gets away again. Goes to the 40. Gets away again. To the 35. Cuts back at the 30. To the 20. The 15. The 10. He dives. Touchdown, 49ers.
What is up, 49ers faithful? We are back with another episode of the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast. It's been a minute, and I got a guest co-host with me, Brian Rennick. Thank you so much for joining me. Al Sacco, the OG, is out. He's got some stuff he's taking care of. You know, it's a busy time with kids and stuff like that. So he's holding it down, you know, doing the parenting thing. So we're in here, and we're going to talk some Niners. And man, you and I were talking off the air, Brian. It's been a long time since we did a podcast. It was like March or something like that we did one, right? And like a lot's happened with the Niners since then,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, there's a lot to get to today. There's a ton of stuff about Trey Lance that's out there that we want to kind of parse through. There's obviously the Deebo Samuel situation with the contract still not sorted out. There's the draft. We can go over at a high level. We're not really into camp yet, so we don't really know what any of these guys are going to do or necessarily right. What shot they have to get extended playing time. But I did want to start off with one thing, and I think that it's weighing heavily on and everybody's minds this past week with the senseless, evil, beyond violent massacre of 19 children and two teachers in Uvalde, Texas. Yeah. You know, Brian, it's been a very difficult week for me being a parent of a young child, and then another one on the way, knowing that there are only certain things that we can do to protect our kids. And then after that, it's, you know, there's hopefully enough sense out there to be able to keep them safe. But, you know, that's a parent's worst nightmare. And it's been a bad week for a lot of us. And, you know, yeah. I think that a lot of change needs to happen in this nation and a lot of progress needs to be made in that particular area. But just hearing about that on Tuesday, it was just the most gut-wrenching thing. And as the details come out over the course of the week, it was it's a very difficult pill to swallow. And my heart, you know, goes out to the yeah. victims' families and anybody that's been affected by this senseless, tragic loss of life. And you know, I just wanted to say that, like, sometimes it's, you know, we come out here and we do the podcast and we're like, hey, 49ers stuff, and like, you know, there's a lot to talk about, a lot of excitement, but it's like, you know, some things are bigger than the sports, right? And like, yeah, obviously everywhere, you, listening to the radio and other podcasts and things like that, like, everybody's addressing and everybody's kind of like has their own way of using their platform. And you know, this is how I want to use our platform to get awareness out that, you know, things need to change. Like, we cannot Absolutely. Continue the senseless loss of innocent lives. First Sandy Hook 10 years ago, mm-hmm. now in Texas. And I mean, even one time was too many. And now this is twice in the last 10 years. Yeah. And innocent babies, man, they never even got a chance to live their lives. And it's just the most tragic, tragic thing you could think of, and just the most gutting thing. So, you know, I don't have much more to say because I can't, like, it's just, I can't bring myself right. to think about it. And I don't know, Brian, like, yeah. I don't know if you're feeling similar to me about that, but it's just the most difficult thing.
Yeah. Same thing. You know, for me, there's so many levels to it. You know, I'm an educator myself. I am not a classroom teacher. I am an independent study teacher, but I am an educator myself. My podcast, co-host, is a principal, a site-based principal. And so just on that level, as educators, you know, it hits deeper. And then, you know, having my own kiddos in third grade and in first grade, and just to even try and place myself in the shoes of those parents is something that, you know, honestly, I can't even handle trying to put myself in those shoes. And so it's been a tough week. It's been a tough week to care about sports when you can't even fathom just how devastating, you know, this tragedy is. And yeah, like you said, as the week has gone on, you know, more information has come out. Things it almost feels like I've gotten angrier as the week has gone on. And so, right. you know, again, I know sports is an escape for a lot of people. And so, You know, we're trying to do that here. But like I said, it has been hard to care about sports this week, but we will do our best to cover some things 49ers related here and continue to hold that community and those families in our thoughts and in our hearts.
Yeah, and very well said. And I couldn't say it better myself. It's just we're gonna try to kind of shift the focus away. I mean, I don't think you could ever really truly shift it, but we're going to try to shift it back to, you know, the stuff that we were talking about before all this happened, right? Like,
yeah,
fighting about what Trey was doing in practice and have people think about Trey. And it's just,
yeah.
So here's the thing for me. And look, we know that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be traded, right? We know that he's basically not going to be on the roster come the start of the season, right? The Niners drafted Brock Purdy. We'll get in the draft in a little bit. Drafted Brock Purdy to be the third quarterback on the team, re-signed Nate Sudfeld, and gave him a pretty decent deal for a backup quarterback, right? Like
$2 million guaranteed, yeah.
Exactly. You wouldn't give your third quarterback, like your practice squad quarterback, that deal. So I think that right now it's just really on Jimmy's health and when he gets better for when they can trade him. Like he has not been in contact with the team.
We hope he's traded, right?
We hope, yeah. We hope we can get something.
We're confident he's not going to be on the team, but we hope that it's a trade and not a release because then you get nothing.
Correct. Exactly. Like I would hope that they get, you know, like a mid round pick for him at this point, but you never know. So right. Really it comes down to the fact that Trey is the man. And mm-hmm. I think that this is something that we were waiting for since last year. And it worked out well for the most part with Jimmy last year. You know, we got to the conference championship and we're within 10 minutes of going to the Super Bowl in a really, really surprising season in a lot of ways. But really now it's about Trey's development and what he's doing. And a lot of it's funny because the things that you hear in the off season about football teams, like you take those with a grain of salt. It's the slow time of year. NFL sure. has the longest, it's got the longest off season, right?
Yeah.
It's 7 months or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Between the Super Bowl and training or preseason. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't made the playoffs, it's even longer, right?
So, yikes. Yeah. That's a good point.
Right. So I think that with all this time and time to ponder and all this stuff, you hear all this like literally just crap about Trey Lance and how he's not a leader and he's not the real deal. Like Emmanuel Acho put out like something this today that was saying, oh, well, I don't believe that he's the real deal. And like word about it is that he's one play Trey and this and that. Look, he's 22 years old and he's started two games in the last 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And he had 17 starts in college. And he is very much a work in progress.
Sure.
Is he going to be a Pro Bowler right off the start? Probably not. We could, you know, but the thing is that doesn't matter because it's not about year one. It's about year two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Right.
Like, hopefully he'll be here for the next decade.
Yeah.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So I don't know, Brian, like, what do you think about all this stuff that people are saying about Trey and like the rumors that like, oh, he's the Niners were at one point, they were saying they were underwhelmed about.
Like, continually underwhelmed is the quote. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think about that?
As I say, so I actually on the Web Zone put out an article. So again, I'm the editor on the site, but I do put out some content every once in a while, trying to do more. But I put out an article about the title of the article was "Why So Negative?" You know, a look at the narrative surrounding Trey Lance, and honestly, to me, it really genuinely feels like the 49ers did something that was, I don't want to say unheard of, but very uncommon in the NFL. And what they did was they put together a Super Bowl caliber roster, and then they traded a bunch of draft capital to move up into the top five, top three, actually, to draft a quarterback when they had a quarterback already on their roster who had taken them to a Super Bowl in the 2019 season. And had just taken them to the NFC Championship game in 2021. Now, granted, that was after they drafted Trey Lance, but you know they already had a quarterback on the roster that they were winning with, and winning with at a pretty impressive clip when he was healthy and on the field. And I think that was the key that people glossed over the fact that, in my opinion, the reason that they decided to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo was because they couldn't count on him to stay healthy for a full season. Cause he's only done it once since being a San Francisco 49er, quite literally still only once. Cause he still missed two games in 2021. So they did something that, like I said, is almost unheard of unless you look at what the Kansas City Chiefs did, right? The Kansas City Chiefs were in a very similar position. They had a quarterback who was, you could argue, top half of the league in terms of if you were ranking quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. But a quarterback that wasn't getting them over the hump, and that hump being winning in the playoffs and getting the Super Bowl. And so with Alex Smith still on the roster, the Chiefs traded up, right? But what they did is they traded up to the middle of the first round, right? or really kind of the end of the, you know, the, because I think it was 11, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong there. So it was a little bit lower, right? They gave up less and they got Patrick Mahomes. Well, the 49ers did the same thing. And I just think people lost their mind because they went up to 3, right?
Right.
And they traded a bunch to get up there. And I genuinely believe that once they decided to make that move, right, which is a move that I think they made because Deshaun Watson's legal trouble surfaced, I think genuinely, I genuinely believe that the package that they sent to the Dolphins was the package that they had already put together to send to the Texans for Deshaun Watson prior to those allegations coming out. And then they missed out on Matthew Stafford. And so those two things happening, they said, all right, let's pivot to the draft. This is a draft that is quarterback rich. And they looked at the 2022 draft and went, that's a draft that's bereft of talent at the quarterback position. Yeah. We got to make our move now. They did. They drafted a kid that they believed in, but knew needed to sit, right? Needed to, I don't want to say mature, because he's a very mature kid, but he needed a year to get his feet under him in the NFL. And so pundits thought, all right, they moved up to 3 for Mac Jones so that they could replace Jimmy Garoppolo right away, when it was, no, we'll keep Jimmy Garoppolo for another season. We'll let him be our quarterback. We're going to let this kid sit. And for whatever reason, analysts can't fathom that if you pick a quarterback in the top 3, that you're going to sit him for a year. Nobody does that, right? Well, nobody does that because the teams that draft quarterbacks in the top 5 suck, right?
Yeah,
they're awful teams. That's why they're in the top 5. Mm-hmm. The 49ers, again, traded up to 3, but even at the position they were, which was 12, they were there because their quarterback was injured the previous season and they had a losing record. Didn't mean that their talent was low, that their roster was bereft of talent. It meant that, again, they were victims of their quarterback getting injured. And so I honestly think it's just, again, people trying to get content, knowing that 49er fans will engage. That's a key right there. Mm-hmm. And then not understanding that this was the plan, or at least not accepting that this was the plan, because it goes against what they think is normal.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, that the idea of a quarterback sitting nowadays, I mean, the back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's kind of how it was, right? You would draft a quarterback, they would sit. Yeah. The Niners famously obviously did that with Steve Young, and they made the trade for him from Tampa Bay. He sat, and they wanted him to learn from Joe Montana. Same thing with, you know, when they were looking to replace Young, like, they brought in Jim Druckenmiller, who was a fantastic fail, but he was sitting, right?
He could pull a vehicle, right? Remember that? He could pull a vehicle. He was strong.
He was strong. He was a country strong, right? So, yeah. It's not unheard of for teams to do this, but I think that what it is that nowadays people want everything like instant. They want instant results. They want a guy who can come in and instantly just set the world on fire. And people forget that Patrick Mahomes, again, sat a full year, played the last game of that first season when he was a rookie. And then he did all right. You know, he was okay. And, you know, it was off to the races the next year. And I think that the funny thing is that if you follow the money in Vegas, the odds of Trey Lance becoming MVP, or people betting on him becoming MVP, like, there's
a ton of money increasing. Coming in.
There's a lot of money coming out of that. Yep. And it's funny because more than one person has said that, like, I think that Trey Lance is going to be a star in this league, and people are just going to wait. And I really feel like, when you were talking about the draft, I really feel like it may or may not have been Mac Jones. Like, that's the famous debate that people like had when during the draft, and some people like to still have it. But I feel like they wanted to jump the Bears because the Bears were probably going to take Trey Lance. They were going to take one of Trey Lance or Justin Fields, right? Whichever one fell to them. And I feel like the Bears probably favored Trey Lance. And
Do you mean the Falcons or the Bears? Because the Bears traded up. They had a lower pick. The Bears traded up to get Fields. Yeah.
The Falcons. Yeah. Sorry. I forgot the Falcons front number four. Yeah. So yeah, they ended up getting Kyle Pitts. And I feel like the Falcons favored Trey Lance. And they wanted Trey. The Niners jumped them to get Trey. They ended up getting Kyle Pitts. And, you know, I think it worked out well for both teams. But that being said, you know, like a lot of the stuff about him is premature because you don't know what he is yet. We don't know if he's going to be an MVP or a superstar. We don't know if he's going to be a bust. We don't like, I think both things are possible, but if you look at and I'm not saying he's going to be a bust at all. I'm just saying like within the spectrum of possibility, like it's one of the outcomes, right? And that's the same for any player.
Yeah.
But if you look at the situation that he's been put in out of all the rookie quarterbacks, it's the best situation by far. And
by far, like not even close.
It's not even close. So I think that based off of that, you can look at it and safely say, oh, okay, like, well, you know, we'll probably have more success than the other quarterbacks will. So that being said, like all this stuff about Trey, it's way too premature. I think that since coming here, he's done everything that you want out of a rookie quarterback who's going to lead your team. He's been a good teammate. He's been a good understudy from Jimmy. He hasn't caused any waves or anything like that. He's quietly worked hard. He's engaged his teammates. He has earned their respect. And he is very quietly becoming a leader on the team at the tender age of 22 years old. Brand new 22 year old. So there's nothing more that you can ask from him as of now, right? Like we'll see on the field, but up until now, he's been checking all the boxes and that's all you can ask for. So again, all the Trey stuff, premature. I think that we should, you know, kind of take everything they say with a grain of salt.
Absolutely. And I think before we move on, the thing that I've been most impressed with Trey is not the physical skill set. It's there. I'm impressed with it. Like we've seen the practice videos. He's made some jaw dropping plays in practice, made some jaw dropping plays when he saw the field in 2021. What I've been most impressed with is the person of Trey Lance, right?
Right.
His intangibles, his leadership, his work ethic, his football IQ, all of these things, right? Are the things that you look for in a quarterback. And even though he has a scant amount of experience, even playing the position, it's those things that to me make it seem like bust while it's a potential. To me, it's the least or a less likely outcome than it is either solid starter or superstar, right? Because when you have somebody that has that kind of work ethic, that has those kind of leadership abilities, that has the football IQ that he does, those are the things that make quarterbacks great, right? There are tons of Jamarcus Russells who can throw the ball from end zone to end zone, but doesn't have the work ethic, doesn't have the football IQ, right? So while his physical tools are impressive, and that's one of the things that excites me, it's the person of Trey Lance that I've been most impressed with. And I think that's ultimately what the 49ers fell in love with as well. And that's why, you know, he's in Santa Clara now.
Yeah, I agree. And the way that he handles the media, like this past week he was asked about polished. He's just like, for a 22-year-old to like behave that and verbalize and articulate the things that he does, it's extremely impressive. And he's just off the charts intelligent. So everything that you said, like, you know, plus one on all of that for me. So, you know, the question that he took from Grant Cohn, who we'll talk
about. It was from Grant,
about criticisms from the media. And he said, like, you know, it's not my job to care about what you guys say. Yep. And his job is to get the loyalty of those guys in that building and to get them to run through a brick wall for him. Like the brick wall that's behind me, right? Like brick by brick as well, right? That's why.
There it is, brick by brick.
But, you know, like that's what he's doing. And he's earning their loyalty. And I think that that's a big thing. And when you have the team behind you, it allows you to be a better leader and it allows you to be able to make mistakes as well, because you know your team is going to pick you up. And I think that's a really good place to be.
Absolutely.
So now I do want to get to this, because this is the elephant in the room, 49ers Twitter and 49ers fans. And we mentioned Grant Cohn. And so I'm going to preface this by saying that, so Grant and I have talked privately like in the past, and my interactions with him have been positive, right? Like he's been really nice and he's been cool and all that stuff. And it's very different from the character that he plays publicly when he's creating content.
Absolutely.
So I think that, like, you know, you and I right now, like we are content creators, we are wearing that hat, and privately we may or may not have different thoughts about like what we're saying and things like that based off of like, you know, what type of engagement we want.
Yeah.
So for anybody that's in the public eye, I think that that holds true. Now, that being said, there is a way to conduct yourself and conduct your business in a manner that is, that will be received by the people that you affect and that you report about and that you cover in a positive way. And we all know that Grant has a shtick and he sticks to that because that's what gets him the engagement that he wants. And that's what's helped him grow, you know, his following and viewership. Now, I think there's a limit to everything when it comes to both praising, you know, a team, right? Because like, you can't just be like a homer and praise them all the time.
Right.
And, you know, being negative about a team, I feel like, you know, just being down the middle is the best way to go. Like being moderate about it is the best way to go and measured. And I feel like Grant, in my opinion, has gotten too much on to the side of criticism to the point where it's like almost like mockery of the team. And
specific players.
Exactly. Yeah. And they've taken notice. Mm-hmm. So if you have been living under a rock for the past little while, so I'm going to say this. So again, Tuesday was a terrible day and it's been a really tough week, but Tuesday was a terrible day for obvious reasons. Right. And then in the evening, like you're on like the Warriors played, they lost, you know, it was mm-hmm. one of those things where it's like, okay, for those people to follow the Warriors, they lost too. So you're looking for something to get your mind off of it.
Right.
And in comes Grant Cohn, the tooth fairy, whatever you want to call it, Grant Cohn flying in, drops us a little present to us that we unwrap, and all of a sudden we see Javon Kinlaw yelling at him over his YouTube or his YouTube stream.
Yeah.
And it was bad. Like Kinlaw really laid into him. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame him. I don't blame Javon Kinlaw one bit. Because if you saw the video that Grant posted earlier from that day in practice, like mm-hmm. when there was nobody around and he was by himself talking all this stuff about Javon Kinlaw, mm-hmm. he had it. I'm sorry to say he had it coming. Like you can't post that and not think that there's going to be a response.
And that's what a lot of people said was, you know, basically, you know, and there was when you got onto Twitter, right? 49ers Twitter. And, you know, there were some that were like, there were some that were defending Grant, right? And they were a small minority. And then there were most fans who were on Kinlaw's side because mm-hmm. most fans really dislike Grant Cohn, and they dislike mm-hmm. him because he does talk overtly negative about their team and about specific players on the team.
And it's unreasonable.
Yeah. And so, and a lot of times, you know, it is elevated rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. That is used specifically to boost engagement, right? Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, they consider that, you know, unprofessional. They consider it like, I guess you could argue that, you know, they consider it using their team, right? And being overtly negative for the team that they root for as, well, this guy doesn't like the 49ers, right? And it's like, well, we got to understand something. Twofold. One, if you cover a team, you're not a fan of the team. You can't be, right? Let's get that out of the way. You cannot be a fan of a team that you cover, because if you are, then you're going to be biased, right? So you've got to try and maintain some level of down the middle, right? But to me, like you said, the overtly positive and overtly negative, they're two sides of the same coin, right? Mm-hmm. They're both disingenuous, right?
Right.
You can't just be negative all the time because there's not negativity all the time. Just mm-hmm. like you can't be positive all the time because there are things that the team will do, that the coaches will do, that players will do, that will deserve criticism, right?
Right.
And so there's got to be a balance there. And the problem with Grant's content is that there's been a lack of balance, right? And mm-hmm. so, and then specifically, you know, he does pick on or pick out specific players that he then kind of goes in on, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that is most frustrating for Kinlaw and for some of these other players is that a lot of what Grant says has to do with his injuries, right? Which I'm sure he's frustrated by anyway, right? As a professional football player, you want to be on the field for your team, right? Mm-hmm. And he hasn't mm-hmm. been able to do that because of these injuries.
Right.
Those aren't his fault. Like, we can't fault him for being injured, right? That mm-hmm. he doesn't choose to be injured. But when that's what you point out as a content creator, then it makes it seem like you are blaming that player for being injured, right? And so I think I understand why Kinlaw was upset, and I think it's completely justified. The thing that took me aback specifically wasn't even the live stream. You know, there were some things that he said in the live stream where I'm like, okay, like, yeah, all right, like let's tone it down a little bit. But
it was funny though. It was super.
It made I laughed, right? But yeah. the thing that took me aback was the attempt at physical intimidation at practice, and that was really the thing that I think if I were John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan or a member of the organization, that's the situation that gives me pause and goes, man, we got to talk to Javon, because you cannot be doing that with reporters, regardless of how we feel about them, right? I guarantee Kyle Shanahan, it's obvious. Anytime he engages with Grant, Kyle Shanahan does not like Grant Cohn. It's obvious, right? And there are lots of players that don't, but no other player has tried to physically intimidate him at practice. And that was where I was like, that's where Javon Kinlaw crossed the line for me. And then Grant crossed the line with the video that he posted prior to Kinlaw coming on his live stream. And that's also what a lot of former players are pointing to. Because in the video, not the video he posted right after practice, but in a live stream prior to the one that Kinlaw joined, where he basically said, like, I wasn't afraid. I was thinking to myself, and he's come out and said this was a joke, but, you know, is that backpedaling? Who knows? Not knowing Grant, but knowing kind of his shtick, I do know that he is very sarcastic. He is very, he is very snarky. And so I do think that to a certain extent he was joking, but he joked about if Kinlaw hit me, like, then I'd get to retire and I would, you know, I'd be able to sue him for millions and I wouldn't have to do this anymore. Right. That's the thing that players are pointing to and going, this is the mindset of this guy, and you're letting him in our building. You're not protecting us, right? Whereas on the flip side, on Grant's side, it's like, why is this player like able to come up and physically intimidate me at practice? Like, then the team is not keeping him safe, right? And so that's where I think there's this, ultimately, to me, both parties are in the wrong. Grant played a role in this. Kinlaw played a role in this. They were both wrong. I appreciate that John Lynch had them come in. They shook hands. It sounds like it's squashed. Grant said it's squashed. Kinlaw went on IG and said, I shook your hand for my organization. This isn't squashed. But then he took that down. So, you know, I don't know. But ultimately, again, I think the biggest issue that most people aren't talking about is that physical intimidation at practice. And I'm hoping that for both parties, I hope that Grant learns a lesson here and starts to kind of evaluate his rhetoric and tone it down a bit. And I hope that Kinlaw learns, hey, you can't be doing that. Like, you're a professional athlete. It's not okay for reporters to consistently, you know, bag on you in the press and never say anything positive. And I understand you're upset, but you cannot let your anger get the best of you.
I think that the most interesting part of this is that the amount of players that came out in support of Javon Kinlaw was captains. Very, very captains, like the team captain, like George Kittle. I consider George Kittle the team, like he is the face of the team right now. Yeah. I think that George Kittle is the team captain. And Eric Armstead, team captain, came out. Raheem Mostert, although he's on the Dolphins now, came out. Tyreek Hill,
who's not even on the team. Yeah.
Not even on the team, came out. George Kittle's wife came out, and it's clearly like it's
Daniel Brunskill. Daniel Brunskill came out and said something. Like,
Brunskill came out.
That I feel like that should say something.
Yeah, exactly. Brunskill came out. Tabor Pepper, the long snapper, came out and said something. Dante Pettis came out and said stuff because Grant had a lot of bad stuff to say about Pettis. And I think that the point that Pettis made was like, look, you know, you say that we're athletes and that we have to deal with this and that this comes with the territory, but he's like, we're human beings too. And I think that it's not about like them being soft or whatever it is. It's about like there's a limit to everything, right? And just because these guys are athletes and they're obligated to talk to the media doesn't mean that the media can take advantage of that privilege. 100%. And that's what it is. It is a privilege to be in an NFL locker room. And you and I talk to, you know, we talk to David all the time about, like, you know, getting field passes and press passes and all this stuff, right? Like, we do, you know, we do this every season before the year, and it is exceeding, for those of you that don't know, it is exceedingly difficult to get a press pass or locker room access or access to even a practice on an NFL team. It is so hard, and it takes so much to be able to get that. And the fact that, like, you know, Grant, you know, he has that access, it's a privilege. Pat McAfee, who I love, by the way, Pat McAfee is fantastic. You should definitely, if you don't listen to his podcast, watch the show, you definitely do that. He's fantastic. Yeah. He got wind of this.
Yeah. And,
which is crazy to me, because it's like, you know, this is like a local beat writer.
It went national.
It went national. And the national
TMZ writers, got it. Yeah.
TMZ got it. Florio got it. He was talking about it. So everybody's talking about this. And I think that, you know, that's not a good look for Grant. Because now, you know, being a reporter, and again, like, there's context involved. Like you said, Ken Loss also had a hand in this too. But what people are seeing is they're seeing basically a reporter abusing his privileges. Yes.
Correct.
And I in think that eyes, like yeah. exactly. And I think that when it comes down to what you can and can't say to a player, you know, like, everybody has their own shtick. Like, Grant's dad, Lowell Cohn, famously, he used to get into it all the time with all of the Bay Area franchises. Right, with players and managers for all of the team, and that was his shtick. And I think that Grant has seen that, and he's like, "All right, that works. I'm going to do the same thing." You know, Kawakami is very similar, where he has the same sort of idea.
Yeah,
Skip Bayless, when he was here in the '90s covering the Niners, he was the same way. And I think that they see that, and they're like, "Well, this is going to drive engagement, so they want to try it." But I think that, like, again, for me, I don't particularly care for that type of journalism. Like, I just scroll right past. I don't care about that stuff. But it resonates with some people, and to each their own. And that's why this is a free country with free speech. And you know, people, they use that. Now, regardless, you know, I do want to close by saying this until we move on to other stuff. But we have a responsibility as content creators to bring our consumers of our content responsible, balanced sort of journalism and takes, right?
Absolutely.
And that's something that I know Al and I have talked about it as well, right? Like, we will tell the truth, and we will try our best to maintain the middle line, right? Obviously, we have personal feelings and things like that that sometimes may or may not leak into our content, but for the most part, we try and stay away from it. And I think that that's something that Grant lost focus of, and I hope, like you said, he can refocus and push out great content, because there was a period of time when he started building his team where, like, the content was better. But now he's kind of back to his little shtick. So I hope he learns.
Yeah.
I hope Ken Law learns as well.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a media environment that is driven by engagement. And for whatever reason, negativity tends to drive more engagement than positivity. And so I think that harkens back to what we talked about earlier with Trey Lance. Like, why has there been so much negativity around Trey Lance? Well, that's what drives content. So my hope is that while I don't think that Grant will change in the terms of, you know, being a little bit more edgy in with his content, being a little bit more contrarian than other beat writers, right? I think my hope is that he stops that habit of zeroing in and targeting specific players. I think that is the thing that players have realized, and I think that's, again, what Kinlaw was specifically talking about. Cause even on that live stream, Kinlaw's like, essentially, I'm not speaking just for me. Like, I'm speaking for everybody. You know, he said it in different terms. You know, he said, nobody F's with you. And Grant's like, what does that mean? He's like, well, you know what that means. And, you know, I think most of us probably do. And what he means is, like, nobody in that locker room likes you or respects you. And it's largely because of how you specifically talk about specific players.
Yeah.
And the way that you talk about them, it's not necessarily objective. It's not analysis. It skews more personal than that. And so my hope is that that is what he realizes, and that's where that rhetoric changes.
Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah.
Man, it's been fascinating to see how this has, like, gained steam nationally.
Yeah.
But moving on though. So the other big thing that's kind of going on right now behind the scenes is the Deebo contract situation. And so here's my stance on it. It's going to get done. It will get done. He's not leaving. They're not trading him. We know this now. It will get done. Like, the Warner deal happened in July of last year. The Kittle deal happened during training camp. They will get a deal done for Deebo. He will be in camp. I have no doubt about that. I think that really the sticking point for Debo was probably the lack of urgency that the team has shown in getting a deal done, because we're seeing all these big deals for the wide receivers resetting the market. Like I truly believe that Trent Baalke, who is the bane of 49ers fans' existence, ruined the wide receiver market by Christian Kirk in that deal. Yeah. So
I feel like that's fact. That's not even opinion. That feels like fact.
Yeah, yeah. Like he ruined it by overpaying Christian Kirk. So now everything else, that's the bar. Now everybody else has to kind of like be leveled up there. So I think it's going to get done. I think he won't be traded. It'll get done. I think that there's a couple things here. I'm hoping that his role will be confined to just being a wide receiver and not just like, and not taking as many handoffs as he did out of the backfield, because he's not going to last. Like, you're not going to stand up to that pounding.
Right.
And the second thing is that I hope that they can carve out a better role for him in terms of like, you know, being more of like an actual traditional receiver, especially with like guys like Danny Gray, like stretching the field and things like that. So again, I think Debo's deal gets done. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. I think twofold. One, you know, they're going to release D Ford after June 1st. That is going to give them $8 million in cap space this year. They're also likely, if Mac is retiring, which some people took what Kyle Shanahan said on Tuesday, it was either Tuesday or Wednesday, where Shanahan said, someone asked him if he had a good idea of what Mac was going to do. And he's like, I have a good idea. You guys should have a good idea. He's in another country right now. Like, I heard that and I was like, oh, so Kyle's saying that he's retiring, right? That's how I took that. Other people didn't take it that way. So I don't know, but it does seem to me that is probably the likelier scenario than him coming back, but I don't know. Nobody knows, because he's not saying anything. But if he does retire, that's another $2 million that they get in cap space. And then ultimately, like you said, this Debo deal is going to get done. I actually wonder if they've been waiting, even though they don't have to, right? They do not have to. They could sign Debo right now with Jimmy Garoppolo on the books and not have that deal affect Debo's cap hit this season at all. So it's not Jimmy being on this roster hasn't kept them from extending Debo, but I do think that they likely thought about having that money early in the offseason to then use for Debo specifically. And so I also think it could be that deal gets done when Garoppolo gets traded, because Debo's not going to sit out minicamp, which comes in mid-June, and he's not going to sit out training camp. He's going to sit in, likely, right? But he's not going to sit out because the new CBA really heavily penalizes players for doing that. And then there's no way that he's going to sit out a season, because then he loses an accrued season and he becomes a restricted rights free agent next year and not an unrestricted free agent. So there are the 49ers have always had all the leverage, right? Mm-hmm. They've always had all the leverage. Debo had leverage to control the narrative in the media and social media. But when it came down to who actually has the leverage in this contract dispute, it has always been the 49ers and will always be the 49ers. So I agree with you. The deal is going to get done. It's just not going to get done until July, in my opinion, just like it was for Kittle and just like it was for Warner.
Yeah. And there's a way that the Niners operate typically with their star players. And I would expect, like with Bosa, when he's up, it'll be the same thing, right? Where it'll seem like they're dragging their heels, but really it's more so like being able to get it done during camp and being able to understand that we don't know what the inner workings are in the front office and how Parag structures these deals out, right? There's a reason why he waits, right? And whether it's like being able to potentially pick up more players and, you know, you need to be able to have more cap space available to do that later on into camp and when you get into the offseason, or whether it's, you know, something like you said with Mac and Jimmy and D Ford, where you've got a bunch of money potentially coming off the books and they want to be able to do that in addition to maybe like making some post June 1st cut of a well-known name or a role player that can come in and play. So there's a lot of possibilities. I think that, like, again, the NFL offseason, and plus the way that Debo's representation had him handle this, I think that that was questionable. And I don't necessarily like the idea of going like social media with your grievances and things like that, because it's like you said, the Niners have had all the cards all along, and they will continue to do that, because even after this year, if there is no deal after this year, they can still franchise tag him.
Sure.
So
for two more years. Yeah,
exactly. For 2 more years. Yeah. And he is going to actually get less money under the tag than he would have gotten if he signed a deal. So I think that really cooler heads will prevail. He'll be in. There's no better situation for Debo than here. So, so that's kind of where I am.
Yeah.
So, you know, wanted to talk about the draft, but I think we're up against it a little bit, so we can save that conversation for next week. But, you know, any kind of closing sort of thoughts from you, man, on how things have gone?
Yeah, I think, you know, I actually really liked the draft. I actually think I may have liked their undrafted free agent class a little bit better than their draft class, just because there are some intriguing names in there, specifically Jason Poe from Mercer, the guard, center, fullback, which I'm so excited to see how Kyle Shanahan deploys him. I'm not sure that he'll make the 53 man this season, but I do think that they have some pretty special things in mind for him. And then also Donovan West, who I think will be the heir apparent to, well, him and one of the other guys they drafted, Nick Zakel, out of Fordham. I think those are the two guys that will compete to be the heir apparent to Mac if he comes back. I guess you can't call him an heir apparent if he retires, but I'm intrigued by those two. And then just the cornerback depth that this team has created this offseason. You know, it's been almost maddening how little they've invested in the secondary since Shanahan and Lynch have come on. And part of that is we know that their philosophy on defense is you build from the front to the back, and they invest the majority of the resources on the defensive line, and it has paid dividends. You can't argue against that. But now they have all of those resources on the line, but they also now have resources in the secondary. And I'm very excited about Charvarius Ward. I think he comes in and becomes a solid number one cornerback. You've got Ambry Thomas, who made leaps and bounds at the end of last year. You've got Verrett coming back. I would be over the moon excited if, you know, he comes back. I personally think that he's going to start the year on PUP, maybe aim for coming back after the bye. But Emmanuel Mosley is criminally underrated. Jimmy Ward is one of the better safeties in the league, unless you are obsessed with turnovers, which I think is a poor metric to, you know, to really judge a safety on, or at least not the only metric that you should be using. And so, and then they drafted Tariq Castro Fields. They drafted Samuel Womack. I'm very excited about both those guys. I think Womack, they have earmarked for the slot. He is quite literally a physical clone of Kaywan Williams in terms of height, weight, but the one thing that he has that Kaywan didn't, and again, because Kaywan is older, but even when Kaywan came out, he's significantly faster than Kaywan Williams. And so that excites me to have a Kaywan clone, but faster. And then Tariq Castro Fields is another outside guy who ran in the 4.3s. And so the depth that they've built in the secondary, I think, is the biggest storyline in the offseason for me. And if those pieces come together, I think this defense could actually be better than it was last season. And if Verrett can come back and play at the level that he did in 2020, now you actually have, to me, a top three defense and a top five secondary, where you've got Ward and Verrett on the outside, and you could slide Mosley into the slot, and all of a sudden you've got an incredible trio of cornerbacks on the field. So the secondary depth, I think, is the biggest one. And then also the investment they made in special teams. I think the special teams is going to be better, including a new special teams coordinator. And so, to me, the holes that this team had last season, which were special teams, secondary, and then you could argue quarterback play, right? They have addressed those this offseason. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you think they addressed quarterback with Trey Lance, I think they did. I think Trey Lance's floor is Jimmy Garoppolo's performance last season in this offense. I think that's his floor. And I think these first 9 weeks, right? The first 8 weeks before the bye, you know, I think Trey is going to play well. I don't think he's going to be, you know, a superstar, but I think after that bye is, again, he continues to get his feet under him, I think we're going to see a completely different offense after that week 9 bye. But to me, this team is better than they were last season. I know that there are question marks at left guard. And obviously, if Mac doesn't come back, there are question marks at center. Personally, if I were John Lynch and Mac retired, I would be, the minute I hung up with Mac, I'd be on the phone with JC Treader to bring him in. He's still a free agent. He has a ton of experience in the wide zone scheme, played a lot under Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland. So I think he could be a plug and play. Give Matt the money you're going to pay Mac, just give it to JC Treader and call it good. And then again, develop those younger guys, and then maybe those guys take over after next season. But I think this team is better, and I'm pretty excited about this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I think that we'll probably get more in depth in the draft next week when Al's back, but to your point, one guy that you did mention, Leon O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
another one of those undrafted free agents.
Yep. That's the one I'm looking at, right? Like, he's the guy that I think that can really make an impact, because safety is a position of need, and you know, he went undrafted. He's got a lot of raw talent. It's just, you know, number one, that 40 time, and number two, like, his coverage skills, like, people talk about, you know, being able to cover guys, and he's still a work in progress there. But we talk about
he was PFF's second graded safety in the SEC last season. I feel like that says something. That's not the Big Ten. That's not the Pac-12. We're talking about the SEC. And for him to be the second graded safety in the SEC, I think that is, his play on the field got overlooked exactly because of what you said, that 4.7 40 time.
Yep. And I think that again, like, they may have found something there. I feel like they may have found something with Leon O'Neal. But he's one of the guys. Drake Jackson, another guy, like, playing opposite Bosa. Yeah. That's another guy, just the ridiculous get off first step. And the guy's an offense. Ty Davis Price, right? Like, he a big bruising back, which is great, because that's what they imagine Trey Sermon to be. Again, like, if Sermon pans out, like, you've got a really deep backfield with Mitchell, Sermon, Davis Price, and also Jeff Wilson Jr., you know, if he can stay healthy. So again, like, you add that plus the speed, speed element with Gray, and, you know, he's your number four receiver now. He can stretch the field, so hopefully stuff opens up underneath, and he's a guy that can go and get Trey's passes, right? We know Trey can throw down the field, so you have somebody that can actually go and get it now. So a lot of exciting stuff, a lot of stuff to talk about going forward, and I think that, you know, like, they may not be, like, in the conference championship this year. I think that we should temper our expectations, but
sure.
I think that what I want this year is growth from Trey. So, you know, I'll close with that, any final thoughts from you?
No, like I said, I'm excited. Again, I'm not going to have any expectations in terms of where they're going to finish this season. I'm not going to predict playoffs. I'm not going to predict conference championship, Super Bowl, whatever. I don't think you can automatically write them off as Super Bowl contenders just because Trey Lance is stepping in at quarterback. That's how talented and deep this roster is. It is a Super Bowl roster. And again, if Trey can just simply keep his head above water and run this offense, not even to the best of his ability, but just run this offense at the same level that Jimmy Garoppolo did, which, you know, Jimmy was great on third down. Jimmy was great on those passes over the middle, if a linebacker wasn't there. But, I think the floor, like I said, I think the floor is a lot higher than people assume, especially with the talent around him. And so, again, I'm not going to predict a Super Bowl or a playoff run. There's no reason to, right? But I also don't think it is out of the realm of possibility. And I think if anybody is writing them off as Super Bowl contenders, I think that is short-sighted, in my opinion. So I'm excited for the season, and I'm excited for OTAs to continue next week, mini camp in the middle of June, and then training camp starts at the end of July. And that's when we're really going to start to get a little bit more information. And then again, I'm excited to see once Jimmy starts throwing, where's he going to go? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. A lot of cool stuff coming up, and we will have coverage on all of that and podcasts more often for you guys. I know it's been a minute, but it's going to start picking up steam now. So looking forward to putting that content for y'all. So, but thanks again, Brian Renick, for joining us, and you are welcome back on the show anytime, man. It's awesome
to you. So thanks, brother.
Thanks for joining. I know it's been short notice, but thanks for hopping on. And for Brian, this is Zane with another episode of the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast. See you guys.